livestock of Israel and the livestock of Egypt, so that nothing will die of all that belongs to the son of Israel. The Lord set a definite time, saying, tomorrow the Lord will do this thing in the land. So the Lord did this thing on the next day, and all the livestock of Egypt died, but of the livestock of the sons of Israel, not one died. Pharaoh sent, and behold, there was not one of the livestock of Israel dead. But the heart of Pharaoh was hardened, and he did not let the people go.
And then chapter 9, verse 26, this is the when the plague of hail.
Only in the land of Goshen, where the sons of Israel were, there was no hail.
And then chapter 10, verses 21 through 23.
Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward the sky, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, even a darkness which may be felt. So Moses stretched out his hand toward the sky, and there was thick darkness in all the land of Egypt for 3 days. They did not see one another, nor did they anyone rise from his place for 3 days. But all the sons of Israel had light in their dwellings.
Four places in the Exodus that were told something very specific about the Israelites and God and the Egyptians and the plagues. What is that? What?
Didn't affect them.
Why?
They were protected by God.
They were protected by God. God was showing Israel, I know who you are. I know who you are as opposed to the Egyptians. And I'm going to spare you all these plagues. And we're only told that four places in these first nine plagues. But I would presume that all nine plagues, there was a distinction made between the Israelites and their stuff and the Egyptians and their stuff. And then we know also that in the 10th plague, which was the
death of the firstborn,
God also made a distinction between Israel and Egypt. How did God do it then?
They had to do something.
They had to do something. What did they have to do?
Put blood over the doorpost.
Sacrifices, blood over the doorpost and lintels. And when the destroyer passed over, that's where it came from, he would see the blood of the doorpost and lintels, and he would pass over the houses and not kill the firstborn in the house. That's setting them up for this whole obedience thing. Here is my commandments. Here you need to obey. And here's why. If you do, I'll protect you. And he showed himself that he didn't need them to do that in those first nine plagues. He did it on his own. It was to set them up for, they're at Mount Sinai now. Here are my commandments. I've shown myself trustworthy that I'll protect you. And now you need to prove to me that you will be trustworthy as my people and do what I ask you to do. All of these things play into that. Anyone else have anything they want to answer when it comes to how Leviticus relates to this year's theme? Okay. I won't do the rest of the review. It was a really good discussion Sunday. And we'll just move on to that. So when I talked about the study's called the divisions of the law, but really it's categories or topics. When we get to the next, work. Sometimes it wants to work and sometimes it doesn't. There it goes. We had the 613, we talked about this on Sunday. How the entire law of Moses was broken down by the Jews, a few Jews, into 613 commandments in 34 different categories. And what someone could have done, if they were so inclined, is they could have saw this cheat and go, oh, those are already done up. All I got to do is find them on the internet and boom, homework done. Some of you decided to go a little bit further, like the Alpha Rachel. I'm going to embarrass you now, Rachel. And not only did she go through and make her own categories, but she also went through and put them in order as they're shown in Leviticus. So these are Rachel's. She's going to be teacher's pet apparently this quarter, which is fine. Someone's got to be, right, Mike?
Right.
She had nine categories. Sacrifices, everyday rules, and of course she had to add a little commentary to some of these, like everyday crimes, don't be a jerk. 6 and 10 belong in everyday rules. Just for symmetry's sake, I decided to put them over there so that the columns look even. But I just wanted to show you somebody else's example of how they did it. Rachel, do you have anything you want to say about your list that's not embarrassing you anyway?
Oh, no. This is exactly what I wanted. I knew what I was doing when I emailed you this.
Okay.
So this was just like a simplification where, because there are so many little details, and it's like, well, I didn't want to go that far because then I thought I'd kind of wreck the class. So this is just me saying, okay, let's limit. Let's let the class continue.
Well, that was one of the options that everybody had, was when you get to a certain category, go, if something piqued your interest, go, dig. Where did it take you? That doesn't sound like Rachel did any of that on purpose.
Oh, no, I did.
Oh, you did?
I just didn't share it. No offense, but I just didn't share it. Because, well, no, Leviticus is one of my, like, big books that I enjoy. So don't get me started on Leviticus, especially when we get to serious crimes. Leviticus 20 is my jam.
Okay. Well, why don't you expand on that one a little bit, since that's your jam? I prefer strawberry, by the way.
Because it's fun. It's just a fun chapter. Because it's all talking about murder. It's talking about intent. It's talking about all the bad things that, because especially since the Old Testament, I mean, the New Testament doesn't go into as much detail on if you do this type of crime, here's this punishment sort of specific thing, because it's more about like the big picture of sin. Whereas the Old Testament is kind of interesting, especially Leviticus, because it goes into the nitty gritty details and shows you just how abhorrent God thinks a lot of this stuff is. And that's what makes it so much fun. Is that you really get to see how awful it is and then compare it to how humans consider it and how God is right up, like he's above that. And he's telling humans, this is awful and you need to agree with me. And if you don't, you're awful. Like that's what I love about it. So it's talking about such things in chapter 20. We're starting off with human sacrifice and immoralities. That's always a great place to start. And then it's talking about verse 15. I don't know if we can talk about that in polite company. That one's fun. Basically, what?
Let's not.
Okay, cool. But just this whole book, though, it's especially because I feel like there's a lot of, in my opinion, censorship on the Bible where it's like, Jesus loves you. Oh, hell, yada, yada. But this is specifically calling out crimes. You engage in bestiality, you're nasty. You're trying to sleep someone's wife, you're nasty. Like, are you trying to sacrifice humans? Awful. Terrible. Like, he does not pull any punches, which that's the thing that is so much fun of reading the Bible, is that even though we might be kind of like, oh, hush, hush, not say this, the Bible doesn't do that. The Bible doesn't have a G rating. It's rated R.
Yeah.
It's righteous, I mean, of course.
And that's
not cowardly.
Particular, as we look, as we think about that chapter from a shadow perspective, shadow fulfillment, who were the executioners of the punishments of these crimes in Leviticus? Did God set up a police force?
He set up priests. He set up the people. And also, of course, God, as we all know, was there as well. So,
right.
A lot of fun.
But like the Joe Schmo in the tribe of Judah, is he going to call the Judah police and say, hey, so-and-so stole my donkey? Right? So that's not the way God set it up. Who do they go to?
The priests.
The priests or? Who? Or?
Aaron.
Or?
All the people they set up underneath.
Which are who?
All the different heads of households.
Heads of households.
The elders.
Elders. The judges. There were different judges in the cities. So now think about that from a fulfillment standpoint. What would be the fulfillment of this?
Church.
Yeah. Local congregations. Doing what?
Discipline.
Church discipline. We'll get to that later in the year, I hope. But I just wanted to make that point. All right. Thank you, Rachel. So let's go down to mine. Rachel had 9 categories. I also had 9. But mine are a little different. And I really should have had 10 because I put neighbor in clean versus unclean, but I really should have made it its own, like Law 1. I had, what's Law 1?
Love the Lord your God,
all your heart, mind, and soul. Love the Lord your God, all your heart, strength, and mind. That's in Deuteronomy. But there's at least four specific commandments that are directly related to that commandment. Love God with all the heart, soul, strength, and mind. So I should have had neighbor as law too, its own category, but I didn't. So, I'm not going to go into mine because I talk a lot. Who wants to share their category, list of categories? And did you get into any rabbit holes? I see you smiling like you want to. No? Somebody's got to want to do it. It's okay. There's no wrong answers here. It's your categories.
So I just put sacrifices, the priesthood, concepts of cleanliness, rules for daily life. I have chapter 26. You have it up there as obedience. I had it as basically a covenant. I mean, it's a...
As what?
As a covenant. I
mean, covenant,
it's a,
okay.
It's a thou shalt not, you shall not kind of a thing. And then vows at the end.
Okay. Did you dig into anything?
More general than this specific here.
Right. Did you dig into any of them?
There's just so much detail. I was going summary. So no.
Good. That's fine. Anyone else? What about at home? Come on. Don't be scared. Do you two want the lessons, by the way? How you doing? Hey, Gerald Melody. They're up here. Nobody else wants to share.
I mean, what I broke down was a lot.
Go ahead. Share. Come on. Share. Just talk loud enough so people won't be here.
Well, I kind of broke it down to the offerings, the instructions for the priests, the consecrating the priests, purifying yourself before God, and then presenting yourself in holiness toward God.
Okay. Did you dig into any of it?
Well, yeah.
What did you dig into? Did you dig into all of it or just some of it?
Just some of it.
What did you dig into?
Well, like the purifying yourself before God, you know, I agree with Rachel that, you know, it gets pretty interesting in there and pretty detailed. And you can unlearn a lot. And I told my husband when I was reading one section, I said, well, see, right here it says that I'm not supposed to eat the, you know, the fish of the sea unless it has the fins. And I said, see, that's why I don't eat lobster and shrimp. So that's...
Yeah, I get it.
You asked for details.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. I just didn't think she'd go to the lobster and shrimp. That's like
crab.
Yeah, huh? Any of that stuff.
Yeah, like was that Ruth Walls that was allergic to shellfish? And she wasn't always allergic to shellfish, right? It was like she had developed that. That's one of those things, like if I develop an allergy to shellfish, put a bullet in my head. Yeah, it's like, no, that's like one of the greatest joys in life is good king crab. Lobster, scallops. Anyway, I had dinner, so I'm not making myself hungry. Anybody else? Good job, Don. Nobody else wants to share.
There was another one that I looked up.
Okay, good.
All they did was divide it into two categories, sacrifices and sanctification. So then you had subcategories in that, but it was just two sections and then little categories after that.
So that was, hold on, let me find my pen, a pen. And that was what again?
Sacrifice and then sanctification. And so under sacrifice, they had the three voluntary offerings, two compulsory offerings, ministry of the priest and offerings. And then on the sanctification, you have sanctification of personal purity, sanctification of the Day of Atonement, sanctification through blood, sanctification in relationship, sanctification in the priest and the feast, and sanctification in the promise.
Cool. Wow. That was somebody else's list you found?
Yeah, someone else's list I found.
Cool. Right on. All right, anybody else? We have a lot of time to kill still. Why do you think I had this exercise for us to do? What do you think? Anyone at home? What do you think? Daniel just wants to be a goofball? Or do you think there was a reason for it? No one wants to guess even. Okay.
It's hard to read as a narrative, and it's hard to read as prose. And so if you have categories where you can see that there's different topics that are being discussed, you can kind of focus more in on this topic instead of trying to read it like a book.
Exactly. It breaks it down so it's more manageable, especially for us non-readers. You can't read Leviticus like a book. You have chapter 10, which is a narrative. You have chapters of section 24, and really, I guess chapters 7, 8, and 9 are narrative because they have to do with the consecration of the priests. But that's just like reading the rest of Leviticus. Leviticus is really more of a manual. It really is.
Daniel?
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you brought that up. So that was also something I was thinking, was that when I was in college, I was required to take a class on international law. And some of the stuff that was in that book, really, I was strongly reminded of the Bible when I was taking that class, with where you have case studies, you have the actual rules, you have the explanation of the rules, and it is basically laid out like an actual law book. And especially because, like, these were technically the law books of the land, because, as we all know, that this was technically an independent nation and under God, like legitimately under God, where they were literally like following all of his stuff. And it's like, oh, if you want to live in these borders, these are the rules and you agree to them, sort of thing. So that's what so this book reminds me a lot of a law book. Forgot about that.
Yeah. As I was, what's the word? Struggling myself through it. Like, this isn't like anything else in the Bible. Nothing else is like this. Deuteronomy has a lot of this, but Deuteronomy is broken up by narrative and explanation of stuff. Leviticus is just Leviticus. But then something really strange happens. Go to chapter 26. And someone read verse 46.
These are the statutes and judgments and laws which the Lord had made, between himself and the children of Israel on Mount Sinai by the hand of Moses.
Now that almost sounds like the end of the book, doesn't it? But then there's another chapter after that. The idea of this being a law book, and this is something I read in every single commentary on chapter 27. I wasn't trying to figure out 26. I was trying to read 27. Understand 27. Every single commentary said the same thing. The way 46 ends leads me to believe that 27 is an addendum. It's something that was added on later to help explain or to fill in, not gaps, but holes. Like gaps and holes are the same thing. To kind of round it out. Because 27, for me, was really the hardest chapter. Because some of the things in there are just, what is this? But if you take 27 and understand it's about the rest of the book, like, let's see. Let's just take 27 verses 1 through 8. Someone read that.
The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, if anyone makes a special vow to the Lord involving the valuation of persons, then the valuation of a male from 20 years old up to 60 years old shall be 50 shekels of silver, according to the shekel of the sanctuary. If the person is a female, the valuation shall be 30 shekels. If the person is from 5 years old up to 20 years old, the valuation shall be for a male 20 shekels and for a female 10 shekels. If the person is from a month old up to 5 years old, the valuation shall be for a male 5 shekels of silver, and for a female, the valuation shall be 3 shekels of silver. And if a person is 60 years old or over, then the valuation for a male shall be 15 shekels, and for a female, 10 shekels. So, and if someone is too poor to pay the valuation, then he shall be made to stand before the priest, and the priest shall value him, and the priest shall value him according to what the vower can afford."
Why is God putting monetary value on people? That's what he's doing. You realize that, right? He's putting monetary value on these people. Why?
Isn't this the same price that's going to be in the New Testament for Jesus? Oh, no, wait. No. That's... Yeah, that is the same price. The same amount of silver.
30
that's right.
Pieces of silver, right. It's 50 shekels in verse 3. Is there 30 in there somewhere?
Verse 4.
That's a female. Your valuation should be 30 shekels. So, okay. So there's a potential shadow there. We know this is a shadow of some kind, but why is God placing value on people? He doesn't even really define the purpose of the value here, does he? When, before Israel left Egypt, God gave them a law. Every firstborn of the womb is mine. Every one of them. Not just of the males, but of the animals. Every firstborn is mine. What we find later on, which Tim's going to hopefully get more into in Numbers, we find later on is the firstborn of all the males were originally the priesthood. God took the Levites later, after the thing at Mount Sinai with the golden calf. He took the Levites because of their zeal for God there. But he still required the firstborn of all animals and all males. There was also, one of the first people he's talking about there, speaking of sons of Israel, say, when a man makes a difficult vow, he shall be valued according to the valuation of persons belonging to the Lord. Your valuation is the male of 20 years old. So his value is this. But did you notice in verse 2 what it says? When a man makes a difficult vow. Why would a man make a difficult vow? What is a difficult vow? Solomon?
A vow that is hard to fulfill.
Hard that is hard to fulfill. A hard for who? What?
The person making the vow.
The person making the vow. So, who remembers the vow of Jephthah? Jephthah the judge. Jephthah was one of the judges. And he vowed something to God. If God would give him the battle.
Is that the one where his daughter worked and he would sacrifice the first?
The first thing comes out of my tent, I will sacrifice to you. What comes out of the tent?
His daughter.
Is that a difficult vow?
Yeah.
Now, some might say, well, he should have gone to Leviticus 27. Leviticus 27 tells him exactly what he would have needed to give to God to get out of getting sacrificing his daughter. Maybe he did. I don't know. That's another study entirely. But there's a lot. This whole chapter is basically, let's see, where is that? I know it was on Rachel's, and I thought I'd put it on mine too. Anyway, this whole chapter is about fulfilling vows and the price of not fulfilling and fulfilling a vow. So, first of all, God put value on people. Do we learn about God's value, how God values people anywhere else in the Bible?
Besides Jesus being sacrificed for people, not really. Although, Genesis, with Joseph when he was sold into slavery, that was cheaper than 30 shekels of silver, which means that inflation incurred.
Okay. Mike, you're going to say something?
Just the shepherd would leave 99 to go find the one.
Right.
That puts a value on it.
Right. He sacrificed his son for everybody. How, if God so clothes the lilies of the field, will he not clothe you, O you of little faith? Do you not know, this is chapter 10 now, Matthew, do you not know that you are more valuable than many sparrows? God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son. There's not just that God values us, but that we should have placed value on one another and on ourselves. Because if who's smarter, us or God?
God.
And if he's going to place value on us, who are we to not place value on us?
Who are we to place value on others?
Exactly. So there's one of these eternal principles, these eternal lessons that we're seeing. We just got to stop and go, okay, once I figure out what is really going on, I don't need to know the minutiae of it. I just need to know, oh, I see vows. Turn to Ecclesiastes 5. Right, Zach? Ecclesiastes 5? Ecclesiastes 5. Verse 1 through 7.
Remember now the Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh. But thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them, while the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain. In the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble.
That's Ecclesiastes 5?
Oh, you said Ecclesiastes.
Yeah, Ecclesiastes 5.
I thought you said 12.
Sorry. 1 through 7.
Okay, start again. All right. Keep thy foot when thou goest to the house of God, and be more ready to hear than to give the sacrifice of fools, for they consider not that they do evil. Be not rash with thy mouth, and let not thy heart be hasty to utter anything before God, for God is in heaven, and thou upon earth. Therefore let thy word be few. For the dream cometh through the multitude of business, and a fool's voice is known by multitude of words. When thou vowest a vow unto God, defer not to pray it, but for he hath no pleasure in fools, pay that which thou hast vowed. Better is it that thou shouldest not vow than that thou shouldest vow and not pay. Suffer not thy mouth to cause thy flesh to sin, neither say thou before the angel that it was an error. Wherefore should God be angry at thy voice and destroy the work of thy hand? For in the multitude of dreams and many words there are also divers vanities, but fear thou the God.
So it's kind of the warning of don't make a difficult vow in the first place. Better you don't even vow than that you make a vow and end up not being able to fulfill the vow. And that point is made by Jesus when he said what?
Your yes be yes,
your no be no. Your yes be yes, your no be no. In history past, in the English vernacular, that was said, keep your word. That was one of the things that I heard a lot growing up, is be a man of your word. Whatever you say, make sure you do that, no matter what it is. That's what, part of what Leviticus 27 and that section is about. And he goes on to talk about also value of land, value of animals, what to do with the tithes to land, and so on. So my point in all that was, like 27, you can't read 27 as a part of 22. It doesn't make sense. There's not a lot of correlation there. But 27 on its own, really kind of, it's one of the few books of the Bible you can take a section and it can mean everything almost all on its own, except when you get into the New Covenant. And now we're bringing in those lessons. Let your yes be no. Let your yes be yes, your no be no. And I can't think of anything about vows in the New Testament, actually. Anyway, we have 10 minutes left. So now that we've kind of dug into that, is there any questions about the topics or categories of Leviticus? Polly.
With the sacrifice, did you want us to go into Leviticus and then go into the New Testament and see where the sacrifice was there and how they were made?
You sure could. You sure could have, yeah. Did you?
Yes, I went where
So there's one of Polly's category, sacrifices. Thank you, Polly.
Yeah, I didn't get too far in it, but 33, I'm sorry. And to love him with all thy heart and with all thy understanding, with all thy soul, and with all thy strength, and thy neighbor as thyself, as himself, is more than whole burnt offering and sacrifice. So I went in and in also for Jesus as our sacrifice, and just the same also.
Good.
But I took it from one step to the next.
Good. Everybody get that? Good. Anyone else? Did we, on Sunday, I was talking with Bill yesterday, did we get into Sunday, I think we did, the fulfillment of the sacrifices? I know we talked about the priesthood. Did we talk about something else too, with the sacrifices? Anyone remember that? Okay. All right, well, just in case, since we have that white, what is it, chapters 1 through 6, and part of 7, then chapter 16 are about sacrifices. I remember we talked about Jesus as the high priest. Remember that? But he wasn't just the high priest, he was also the sacrifice. But are we also not priests? Right? In fact, I think that comes from Leviticus in 1 Peter. I think that comes from Leviticus. You are a holy race, a chosen priesthood. Where is that? Chapter verse 9. No, it doesn't. We're also priests. But we're also sacrifices. Romans 12. What does it say? Romans 12 verse 1.
Present your body a living sacrifice.
Present your body a living sacrifice. You are a living sacrifice. So not only is Jesus the fulfillment of those sacrifices in Leviticus, and he's not just the fulfillment of the priesthood, we're also fulfillment of a priesthood, and we're a fulfillment of sacrifice. So when we talk about offering ourselves as sacrifice, as you look through those sacrifices, do you see yourself? Should you see yourself?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think maybe what you were thinking about in 1 Peter is in chapter 1, verse 16, Peter quotes Leviticus where it says, because it is written, be holy for I am holy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the major verses in all of Leviticus chapter 19, verse 2, where God says that very same thing about the priesthood. And then later in chapter 2 is when he goes on to say, you are a royal priesthood, a holy nation. So the idea that Peter's talking about in 1 Peter about being holy is the idea that God shared with the priests and the people in the book of Leviticus that directly connects to us as Christians today when he says in chapter 2, your royal nation, a holy priesthood. It's that same thought is being discussed, especially in the mind of Peter's audience.
So, taking the idea of the sacrifices, one of the things that we talked about earlier was how this Leviticus study fits in the theme, and what was the very first thing, I think it was Rachel said, was how Leviticus fits in the theme. Anyone remember? Starts with an O.
Obedience.
Obedience. So, we go like to say Leviticus 1. Go ahead and turn to Leviticus 1. And we have, starting in verse 1, we don't really have time for that though. And in verse 1 through 9, we have one of the many sacrifices. And it's very specific. If his offering is a burnt offering, this is verse 3, it'd be from the herd, a male without defect, offered the doorway of the tent of meeting. Verse 4, he shall lay his hand on the head of the burnt offering. And verse 5, he shall slay the young bull before the Lord. Aaron's son of the priest shall offer up the blood and sprinkle the blood around the altar. Verse 6, he shall then skin the burnt offering, cut it to pieces. The sons of Aaron the priest shall put the fire on the altar, etc., etc., etc. Everything in Leviticus is like this. If this, then that. Here's the manual. Here's the directions, etc., etc., etc. And I remember making this point a little bit on Sunday, but we'll make it again. Verse 3. If his offering is a burnt offering from the herd, he shall offer it. A male without defect, he shall offer it at the doorway of the tent of meeting. Stop there. What was the purpose of offering it at the doorway of the tent of meeting? What was the tent of meeting?
Tabernacle.
What's the purpose of offering it at the doorway of the tent of meeting? Zach?
Was it to purify yourself before entering the tabernacle?
Partly, yes.
Is it to see if it was going to pass the test? If it should even come into the tabernacle for sacrifice?
Maybe. Well, remember, only the priest can enter the tabernacle. This is just a regular Joe Schmo Israelite bringing an offering. What's in the tabernacle? What's in the doorway of the tent of meeting?
You're talking about the inner part of the tabernacle?
Yeah.
Not the outer gate, the inner gate.
Well, the doorway would be where the altar burnt offering and the bronze laver are. That's the doorway.
Right.
But as you go into the tabernacle, what's in the tabernacle?
Holies of Holies.
What's on it?
Holies of Holies.
Yeah, and what am I?
Ark of the Covenant.
Ark of the Covenant. And what's in the Holy of Holies that sits on the Ark of the Covenant?
The mercy seat.
God, the mercy seat. God is in the tabernacle. So he's bringing the sacrifice to God, as close as he is allowed to go. So Romans 12:1 says, present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God. Thinking about all the specifics of these sacrifices and how we are to be living sacrifices, holy and acceptable to God. Is this just, okay, make your sacrifice and you'll be pleasing? Or is there something more about us as sacrifices we need to be getting from this?
As we come from our heart.
What?
As we come from our heart, our sacrifice, it has to be more than just showing them. It's got to come from deep within.
Right. Right. The requirements of God, when we offer how he wants it offered, are what make it holy, but also the heart, the intents of the thoughts of the heart make the sacrifice holy. If we are offering it in a way that is pleasing to God. If we try to offer something that is detestable to God, is that pleasing to God? No. Okay. So, on Sunday, we're going to study chapter 10. And that's where things get really alive. Really, the entire book of Leviticus is summed up in chapter 10. We're going to see that Sunday and I think Wednesday as well.